Second Grade Conference, Lecture 5, The Second Grader, Part 5. I want to talk in more detail about the temperaments. As I've said, in many respects, second grade is the year in which the effect of the temperaments has its greatest impact on the life of the class. This is the year where we can reach children through their temperaments most deeply. And this is also the year in which we can help parents by giving them advice about things that they can work on at home. And this means a great deal to parents. We want to be careful to differentiate between the life at home and the life in school, and I'll be speaking much more about this when we are specifically looking at work with parents. But it's also good to now and then give them some things that they can do with their children at home without being too invasive or preachy about it, and the temperaments usually come in quite useful here. So the problem is that the temperaments are not as easily identified as they were in Steiner's time, and certainly in times earlier than that. If we think, for example, of characters in Shakespeare's plays or in novels like Don Quixote or Tom Jones or Charles Dickens's remarkable many, many novels, you really find characters there who are of very clear, recognizable temperament. And it's not just that they were made out of the blue. The novelists, the playwrights, the poets obviously drew very much on the kind of people who were around them. So it's harder today. It's harder for many, many reasons. And one of them is that the astral body plays a much greater role in the life of the child and in human life altogether. The streaming of the astral body, which has to do with the future, which has to do with much that's passed in other incarnations, this is coming to us much more strongly, much more rapidly than it did in the past. So it kind of interferes with, it obfuscates, it veils the effects of the temperaments. And we have to do a little peeling away of those layers, those sort of superficiality of the child's astral body. The problem is that because the astral body is stronger than it used to be in the child, and secondly, and very importantly, because it's easier for parents to relate to their children on the astral level, because the parent is there, than it is to relate to a child on the etheric level, which is sort of what we as Waldorf teachers are always trying to do. It means that the astrality is even stimulated. It's even overly awakened by the parents. And here again, I will give you some advice on helping parents with this. This is huge. And of course, in our world, all of the media, all of the stimulation, all of the shopping malls and the highways and the billboards and the devices and all of that, all of this also creates this tremendous amount of static and interference between us and our ability to perceive the child's true temperament. So, the advice I'm going to give you will seem to be fairly superficial and kind of obvious, but it isn't at all, and that's what's very interesting. And we see how we ourselves are deceived by the astral show and are not able to see things that should be kind of obvious to us. So this is my advice. Look at the child's physical type, and this will help you in understanding the child's temperament. A melancholic will choose a body, will work on a body, will transform that body until it's a melancholic body. And what they are looking for is a body that is thin, that is frail looking to a certain extent. The melancholic will often have a kind of waif-like look about him or her. And because they are pressing themselves so deeply into the skeletal system, they don't have a whole lot left over to fill out that body. And even the kind of clothing that the melancholic likes to wear is sort of clothing that's condensed, that's compressed, that's contracted. So melancholics don't like to wear things that are too loose. They like to wear clothes that fit kind of tightly, and they're not looking for a whole lot of color either, because the melancholic is living sufficiently, contentedly, in the physical and etheric bodies, and therefore is not all that interested in bright colors and many patterns. They'd be happy wearing dark colors day in and day out for most any occasion. So look for the thin, slight, lightweight child who also, strangely enough and sometimes contradictorily enough, is walking with a heavy tread. Even if that child is showing traces of sanguine behavior, choleric behavior, there you have a child who is meant to be a melancholic, at least for grades 1, 2, and 3. And if you haven't worked with them sufficiently on melancholia, on helping them cultivate that so that they finally drink deeply of it, this is the year in which the window for working with that temperament is really wide open. We'll talk about some of the specifics in second grade, how you're going to work with each temperament. The phlegmatic, usually that's an easy one to see. Here's the child with very round, moon-like features, who probably is a little bit on the heavy side. And I'm not speaking of obesity here. Very often it simply is baby fat. But it's baby fat that may stay with that individual for many, many years, even into adulthood. So there's this rounded, heavier quality, but there's a kind of liquidity, a liquid feeling to that roundedness. It's a child who usually looks pretty healthy, sometimes even exudes a feeling of health when they come in from outside. They're, you know, rosy-cheeked and look like they're really very, very stimulated by what's outside, though it won't change their behavior much. And they, though much heavier on the whole than the melancholic, walk with a surprisingly light gait. There's something quite buoyant about them. And in later years, phlegmatics often prove to be fantastic dancers, really wonderful out on the dance floor. And the phlegmatic is a child who likes clothing that's loose and comfortable and soft and kind of formless. It's as though the ever so popular sweatpants, sweatshirt ensemble, which is so much of an inherent quality of American dress today, was invented for phlegmatics. And whereas the melancholic likes black or deep purple or dark blue, the phlegmatic likes green, grayish green, brownish green, any variety of something on the green, brownish side. And they also will tend to wear the same clothes again and again because they are living very strongly in their etheric body. The etheric body is a body of habit, and it likes to sort of fill out whatever you're wearing with itself until it finally becomes really, you know, like an old shoe or that favorite pair of jeans or something like that. We all have a bit of a phlegmatic quality when it comes to our most comfortable clothes, but the phlegmatic has no other relationship to clothes but that. And in fact, parents will tell me that when, for hygienic reasons, they have to peel those sweat clothes off their phlegmatic child and put it in the washing machine, that especially if they have one of those washers that has a round glass porthole in it, that they've seen their phlegmatic child sitting by the washing machine, watching it go through the cycles, not to lose sight of the beloved sweatshirt that was taken off. So look for qualities like that, and you very likely, again, regardless of the admixture of other temperaments, you probably do have a phlegmatic child here, and you're going to sort of want to, again, remind them of the choice that they made in the spiritual world, remind them of the work that their etheric body needs to be doing right now, and help them find their truly phlegmatic nature. From a simply superficial observation, it's easy to confuse sanguines with melancholics, because like the melancholic, the sanguine also is often thin, sometimes a bit frail looking, but if you watch them for a while, you're going to see that there's a kind of sparkling, outgoing, extroverted quality to the sanguine, which is rarely, if ever, present in a truly melancholic child. So for the physical type, for the sanguine, again, look for the child who tends to be thinner, who is usually very attractive in one way or another. They're generally, sanguines tend to be good-looking individuals because in them, the etheric body has penetrated the astral body. The astral and the etheric meet with a greater degree of harmony than is true in the other three temperaments. And the astral body is very much connected to being beautiful, to appreciating beauty, to bringing beauty into the world. Beauty is us, in a certain way, says the astral body, among other things. And so one will find in the sanguine a quality of attractiveness, which is a double-edged sword, a mixed blessing. And even adults who spent their childhood as sanguines will sometimes complain that people only seem to like them for their looks and not much else. And we want to be careful as teachers that we go beyond that, you know, see it for what it is, but also recognize the child has to cultivate many other things as well, not just what they were given. So you look for the child who's thin, who's fair, whatever race they are, there's a quality of light that seems to permeate the sanguine's nature. And as far as clothing goes, fashionable. Whatever is in fashion, the sanguine will wear. If you're not sure what's in fashion, look at what the sanguine is wearing, and I guarantee you it is in fashion. They always find the most beautiful ensembles. They don't like to repeat themselves. Sanguine children especially like patterns. They like all kinds of little things that they can look at when they're not focusing on morning lesson or something like that. And they are very aware of what everybody else is wearing, too. And sometimes they will be, if not necessarily fashion consultants, they'll be more like fashion insultants for others. One has to watch a little bit with that. So when you have a child like that who you feel is very, very aware of their hair, of their clothes, of their shoes, for the girls, it's especially the clothing. For the boys, it's especially those running shoes to get the latest and the greatest. And sanguines need running shoes because they're often on their toes, literally. Their step is not the heavy gait of the melancholic, not the buoyant step of the phlegmatic, but they are on their toes. They're sort of born ballerinas, boys and girls alike. And you want to help them in time be able to finally come down on their heels. But the ball of the foot and the arch of the foot, very, very important for the sanguine, that arch where, in a way, the foot really breathes, leaving space for air. That's often an important part of the sanguine's foot, also where they can have their share of accidents as well. So this will help you recognize who the sanguine child is in the classroom, and we'll talk about how to work with that. And finally, the choleric. There you are looking for the sturdy, strong body, particularly the legs, which often, even in the young choleric, you're going to see a kind of pillar quality. And as I said earlier, that this body is so well developed and so capable and so ready for movement and action, not because the choleric has penetrated it so deeply, which is one of the biggest misconceptions that we have as Waldorf teachers about the choleric, the belief that they are deeply incarnated and well incorporated. It's absolutely the opposite. The physical body of the choleric is allowed to follow its own laws. It's not bothered by the higher members, and it develops in a relatively perfect way, insofar as that's possible under the present conditions of our time. But nonetheless, you have a body there that's going to be strong, that's going to be capable of lots of action, but that will often operate on its own laws, which have a lot to do with force and power and will and action, and therefore that choleric is going to get in trouble because he or she will not always know what that physical body is up to at any moment. They're kind of out of it. They're somewhere else living in some sort of fiery emotional reaction to something or other. So they really are, as Goethe described Faust, two souls live within one breast. The choleric is kind of a dualist who is as much out of herself as she is in fact, much more out of herself than in. So you're looking for a child in whom the physical body appears to already be developed quite ahead. Steiner has described that because, again, the physical body is operating out of its own laws, there's a compact quality that many cholerics are not very tall people, but carry a very powerful, compact quality in short or medium height bodies. So rarely will the choleric be the tallest in the class, but will carry a quality of forcefulness that is in many ways much more powerful than even something a very tall individual might carry. And the choleric's choice of clothing is completely individuated. You never know what they're going to wear. They have no concern for, no interest in what's fashionable. It's just sort of, it looks like whatever they found on the floor of their room or in their closet, they throw together, and yet it always looks good on them. In fact, it looks incredibly great on them, and you realize it can't be replicated. No mall, no boutique could ever sell that sort of thing. It only looks good on them because it reflects their own uniqueness. And that's certainly a quality that the choleric child has. Already you feel the seed of a kind of individuality starts to appear in them, even in their dreamy and often fairly unconscious way. In the next lecture, we'll look at how to work with these children in grade 2.